strategic conversation with the party staff and strategy team that he looks forward to if he gets the chance, not only discussing his own placement, but also positioning strong candidates in important ridings. Local riding Courtney Comox is known to be closely contested, with the tightest race in BC in 2017, according to the Times Colonist, and a margin of only 92 votes in the most recent election in 2024.
The BC Green support in our riding, the Courtney Comox area, is really strong. We're one of the only two ridings in all the province that grew the Green vote in the last election, despite all of the market forces and tariff concerns and Trump concerns that affected this riding and made the smaller parties have more of a challenge. We saw that in the federal election as well. Smaller parties didn't do as well. But when all of these clouds lift, we're going to have even more support. The Green support in Courtney Comox riding provincially has grown in the last three elections, and it's on an upswing. So I'm really optimistic, no matter whoever the candidate is here locally, that we'll have a really good chance at the next election.
Kerr speaks highly of the most recent candidate, Arzina Hamir.
One of the core fixed values of the BC Greens and all Green parties around the world is respect for diversity. And we have an amazing candidate here in the last election, Arzina Hamir. What a great example of a diverse, powerful, strong leader in our community. She has done so much with our local farm industry, working with local farmers and growers. And she's just been such a great voice here in the Comox Valley. And what I've been doing over the past 3 weeks is I've been traveling the province looking for great candidates in every community across BC that we can ensure that we have a winning team going into the next election, a great platform, and fantastic candidates to win more seats for the BC Greens in the next election.
Hamir spoke to CHLY and CVOX in April about the vote split and strategic voting under the current first-past-the-post electoral system. Kerr says the most important thing for our province from a democratic standpoint is to have a better system of voting. He says he hopes that the government will heed whatever recommendations are made by the Electoral Reform Committee that is traveling the province to hear what people have to say.
In that case, everyone's vote will matter. Everyone across the province, whether you're a progressive voter, Green or NDP voter in a very rural, conservative riding historically, your vote will matter. Let's say you're a conservative and you live in downtown Victoria, which is mostly a Green and Orange country. Your vote will matter. So we really need a system where everyone's vote matters and we have the number of MLAs in the legislature that reflects the votes that happen by people across the province.
When it comes to his own campaign trail, Kerr is feeling positive about the conversations he's had so far through various parts of BC and is looking forward to continuing his tour next in the Sunshine Coast, Nelson, and revisiting the capital city, meeting more Greens along the way.
And really feeling the momentum that we're having in this campaign has just been a really exciting thing for me as a candidate and for our whole team. Our team is very diverse. We have members from all across the province and really been an exciting last few weeks, and the next few weeks will be even more exciting, I'm sure.
Kerr says voting in a leadership contest is a valuable way to exercise one's democratic rights.
Party leadership races are the opportunity for people to get involved in politics where your vote counts so much more. It's such a small number of people that actually vote in a leadership race, and that really does change the direction of a party and even the province. So I do encourage anyone, you need to sign up by August 10th in order to vote in the September election.
For CHLY and CVOX News, this is Heather Watson.
This report, in partnership with CVOX, was made possible with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs program, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Thank you to Heather Watson from CHLY and CVOX for that piece. Once again, yeah, that was her conversation with Jonathan Kerr, a candidate for the Green Party of BC's leadership race. And, you know, one of the other notable contestants of that race is also Emily Lowen, who is a 24-year-old who has been involved with the Green Party and is just a general, I guess, organizer and advocate for climate justice. And one thing I thought was interesting is, you know, he isn't the only person of the Green Party that has mentioned this, but lowering the voting age within BC to 16. And I think one thing that I'm noticing is sort of a trend within the party is just wanting to get younger people more politically involved, but also politically aware. And I think that's something that a lot of people should be focusing more on. You know, when it comes to where people around my age group and age groups below me get their political information, a lot of it is through social media. And depending on the sources that you pull from, that can be beneficial, but it can also be quite harmful in other ways, especially if you don't, I guess, have the wherewithal to parse through what is helpful information and what isn't. So I think it's important to get more young people, especially within our communities, to be more politically active, politically informed, and politically aware. And if that involves, you know, young people vying for leadership positions, then hopefully that's the outcome. Anyways, before we get into the next piece of the hour, I am going to play another track from another local Vancouver artist. This one is from Jan, someone who has been up in the charts here at CJSF. This track is titled Colored Lights.
Turned up, I am spinning in time. trying not to give up, and you're watching me go from the edge of the room, and the color lights pass as it stops on you. The lights down low, and the music turned up. I am spinning in time, trying to feel like enough, and you're watching me go from the edge of the room, and the color lights pass as it stops on you.
Once again, that was Jan with Colored Lights. And we have another news piece for all of you. This one is a bit of a lighter one in a sense. It is about a hide tanning workshop that was held in Hazleton, BC. This is also from CICK in Smithers, but Hazleton is a town that's about, I think, an hour drive from Smithers. And this one comes from other fellow LJI journalist Pamela Hassan from CICK. And this is about a artist who recently held a workshop showing its participants how to tan hide, you know, whether that be fish skin and making that into a soft leather and things of that nature. And I think that is quite fascinating. So I thought I would play that for all of you right now. Hope you enjoy.
This is CICK News. In Hazleton this past week and weekend, Rachel Jans held a hide tanning workshop at the Learning Center on Omnica Street in Old Hazleton. Rachel is from Gitxsan Territory, but lives in Saskatchewan now. Her father is celebrated Gitxsan carver Phil Jans, and so art, historically informed practices, and beauty are in her blood. During the Pioneer Days parade in Hazleton on the last day of her workshop, I stopped in during a show-and-tell portion of her class. When I arrived, Louise, a student of hers, was showing off her sockeye hide that she had worked on during the week.
What we do at first, we started to do the front to take all the, what do you call that, scales. You know, you have, and brush all the, like there's still some meat left down there.
I used to scrape.
A big spoon, oh, but you're gentle all you need. With it.
Okay.
But I've never seen skin so strong in my life. And why? Now I know why they survive in the water.
This was a big thing in like ancient.
And I kept with the spoon. Like you gotta hold it like that. See, there's still more. I know there is.
Tell her what it tasted like.
I don't know. It tastes very, very funny, but kind of hot and cold. You know, I was going like this. You get dried out the mouth.
So that is how they used to test the tannin to see how strong it was. Is the more it dried your mouth out, the stronger the tannin was.
Okay. Rachel has studied with a variety of hide tanning teachers and is relatively new to the practice. But after accepting the challenge to teach a 13-week graduate-level course at First Nations University of Canada, focusing on bark tanning methods, she has now tanned animal hides from elk and bison all the way to mice and other little creatures.
Is this a little lamb?
That's a baby goat.
A baby goat.
Sometimes when they're born at the wrong time of year, especially I've been living out in the prairies, they freeze to death. And so the ranchers call me and I come and pick them up and then I skin them and they make beautiful leather. So there's like four main different types of natural tanning. One is using plant tannins with barks and leaves and roots.
Oh my gosh, that smells so good.
Doesn't it? So real leather, that's where it gets its smell from, is the plants that it's tanned with.
Tannins are the medicine or biomolecules found in plants. They're what heals a tree if it's been damaged and are known for their ability to bind with proteins or other organic compounds. They naturally occur and are an astringent, which creates a puckering sensation in your mouth, and the tannins natural extract from bark or leaves, such as in this case, transform animal hides into usable leather.
Most of the leather we have today is not tanned like this. It's tanned using chrome or chromium, which is like really harmful to the environment. They started using that process during the Industrial Revolution, and it was to keep up with the demand for leather. Whereas if you look at the old school leather like this, that's all naturally done. They're finding samples that have survived over 1,000 years.
Wow.
Yeah. They call it a living leather because it changes as it ages. I've got poplar here, which I boiled from the bark, and also some from leaves. And then this one is spruce. This is horse chestnuts, which I've never worked with before, but they're really quite high in tannins. This is willow leaves, and this is willow bark. And this is a commercial tannin that we'll do that fish skin in.
Okay.
But mostly I've been working with commercial tannins up to now. So being able to come home and work with the plants here, I'm able to start going right to the source. So it's like you can have leathers that are more made out of plant than they are of animal. It's like this incredible science that our ancestors knew about. And you kind of wonder what it was, how they discovered this and how they explored this. This type of tanning, natural tanning, is something that happens all over the world. This week there was some people who were interested, especially when we did the fish leather on Tuesday. It's like, fish leather? We can make leather from fish?
So because this is audio, can you explain what you're doing and what I'm looking at?
So this is a completely rinsed sockeye hide. We took all the meat and fat off the back, and then we cleaned up the back, and then we did a bunch of rinsing on it. And so now what I'm doing is just squeeze some of the water out of it. So I'm just putting this hide into the tannin, and I'm just like draping it into this jar, pulling it up and down, and I'm going to fully submerge it in there. And throughout the course of up to 10 days, I will check it, and I will do what Louise was doing, is scrape the back of the hide just to open it up and stretch it, release some of the membrane that wants to come off. And it just allows the tannins to get thoroughly into the skin.
And 10 days is about, like, is about typical for...
It really depends on the tannin and the hide. Like, if I'm tanning a moose hide, that could take months.
Rachel was also smoke tanning a hide and showed me a deer hide that she was preparing that was kept in a large Ziploc bag.
So it's just a chunk of deer, but this has actually been put in an oil emulsion, which is a totally different type of tan, and it's you know, to make buckskin, and it makes a totally different kind of leather. And it's really what you're doing with this one. It's not a chemical change to the hide. It's a physical change to the hide, where you're surrounding the protein molecules with oil so that they can slide past each other, basically. Uh-huh. And it keeps it soft and supple.
Yeah.
This type of leather is, in many ways, a lot more labor intensive. This is probably the oldest kind of leather that we have record of, and it's like back to the Paleolithic times, right? So 400,000 years ago, people were making this kind of leather.
What oil?
This one, I think I used olive oil.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, feel free to stretch it. You'll see that it's like...
Oh, whoa, that's like really... It's very eager to stretch. Do you find that... Is it like an upswing in interest for tanning, like... Young people who want to, like, maybe start homesteading or anything like that?
I've had many, many teachers. I think, you know, it is a very community-driven activity. It's been a little over a year since I've been really hardcore doing this. But all the time I'm finding more and more people who are engaged with this. I've set up at a few different events here this summer, and the kids are just so into it. I came and go with some high tanner friends of mine and teachers. We were working with the kids, and it was like they were lined up for a carnival. They were like, they all wanted to work on a hide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I think about my teachers, one of my biggest teachers has been the hides themselves, the plants themselves. Yeah. That's one thing I really like about hide tanning, is this is, you know, it's something that crosses all cultures.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to connect people and have people work together and, you know, celebrate all cultural histories.
Thank you to artist and educator Rachel Jans for bringing this ancestral practice to the community of Hazleton on Gitxsan territory, and to Brenda Barrett for making the learning shop an available and welcoming space to the public. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.
Bird note. A hawk is hunting in the kingdom of cars and 18-wheelers.
This is the American dream of freedom on wheels. An automotive age traveling on time-saving superhighways.
In 1956, the Eisenhower administration announced plans for the nation's new interstate highway system. 41,000 miles of superior highways with limited on-off access, multiple lanes for high-speed travel, and often a grassy border on either side and down the middle. These grassy byproducts of highway construction created ribbons of wildlife habitat, soon occupied by small mammals such as voles, favorite prey of the red-tailed hawk and other raptors that are now common along many stretches of interstate, as are deer, coyotes, and other animals. At a conservative guess, if the average grassy verge is a modest 50 feet wide on each side of the freeway, that's 12 acres of grass per mile of highway. Multiplied by the current 47,000 miles of interstate, that's about 881 square miles of green. And that's only the interstates. There are hundreds of thousands of other highway miles that crisscross the country and often offer equally prosperous hunting grounds for a multitude of birds. Accidental gifts from the age of the automobile. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
And we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. I hope you enjoyed all of these segments for this hour. And I just want to thank you all so much for tuning in. You know, I think that whether it be in Smithers or Hazleton or the Comox Valley, the work that's being done by all of the journalists involved with the Local Journalism Initiative is really, really necessary and really, really important, as local news coverage is something that is becoming increasingly precarious and hard to come by in some areas. You know, when I first started this job, there were a good few, you know, you can always argue for more local news coverage, in my opinion, but there were still a good few publications that do not exist anymore within the Tri-Cities, within Burnaby, within New Westminster, and that just makes what we do here that much more important. So now that I'm back, I am going to be putting all my energy and effort into producing news for all of you, so stay tuned with that. Coming up next, in about 5 minutes, we've got none other than Democracy Now!, which plays 11 a.m. Monday to Friday here on CJSF with Amy Goodman. And before we get into that, though, I am going to be ending off with one last song. This is some local Vancouver jazz from none other than John Bentley. And this track is titled Go Ahead. So that'll be the last track they'll be playing for this hour, and it'll go directly into Democracy Now! Thank you all so, so very much for tuning in this hour. If you want to keep listening to Speak Up, make sure you tune in not just to this show, but on Thursday as well at 10 a.m. Jesse will be hosting that one. If you tune in Monday next week, Magnus will be hosting that one as well. And then for Tuesday, it will be myself. So yeah, make sure you keep that on your calendar. Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 10 a.m. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. Once again, John Bentley, Go Ahead. Only on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll be right back.